you want to be prepared to read along with me, we're going to start at the beginning, Genesis chapter 1. Scared me there for a minute. 2 years ago, when we were going to camp, I was assigned to teach a certain piece of material. The theme for the week was Our Holy God. Ty and Lucas, y'all may remember the year that we did that. And I was assigned to teach with Ashley Miller, who's a cousin of Andy's. And another guy that y'all know is Ted Corder, who came here and did a gospel meeting for us. There's a fourth guy, it was Darren Alexander. He lives up in North Alabama. He's a school administrator. It was a really good study that we had. But the day that I taught about our God, our Creator. And so we're going to think about creation this morning and lessons that we can learn from it. And I want to start by just reading. And we're going to read all of chapter 1 and the first three verses of chapter 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament, so the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herbs that yield seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with the abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our own image. According to our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. Then God saw everything he had made, and indeed it was good. And so the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. He rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. Our focus this morning is going to be on those first 6 days. It's not to say that the seventh day isn't important. It's just that the six days that come first, those are the days of creation. So, I know I've taught this in teaching Bible classes before, and there is an order of the creation that we talk about. First day, there was day and night, verses 3 and 5. There's skies and seas on the second day, land and plants on the third day, sun, moon, and stars on the fourth day, the birds and the fish on the fifth day, animals and man on the sixth day. We think of it just 1 through 6. One of the things that I want us to think about this morning, and it will not change the order 1 through 6, but that there is some symmetry in the creation that is seen in the order of creation. There is an order in creation. So if we think of those 6 days as two sets of three, there's the first 3 days, and there's the second set of 3 days. So in the first set of 3 days, there's day and night, there's skies and seas, there's land and plants. In the second set of 3 days, they correspond to the first set of 3 days. You see, the sun, moon, and stars are created on the first day of the second set. On the first day of the first set, he created the things of the sun, the moon, and the stars. He created time. He created day and night. So often we think about the creation was a creation of tangible things. He created birds and plants and the land, and he created the seas. Those are all tangible things that we can put our hands on. But on the first day, he created something that's not tangible. It's a concept. It's time. He created day, and he created night. But on the fourth day, the first day of the second set, he put elements of time in that space. He created the sun, the moon, and the stars. So there's a correlation between the first day and the fourth day. There's a correlation between the second day and the fourth day. In that the fifth day, he created the birds and the fish. And on the slide, I put fish. It's much more than fish, to be specific, right? I put everything in the seas under the category of fish. That's not technically correct. but bear with me, it just makes the story go easier. All of the things that belong in the skies and the seas, He created on the fifth day, which corresponds to the second day. And y'all are way ahead of me. You see that He created on the sixth day the animals and man, which occupy the land. So in the first 3 days, He created the environments. He created the places. He created the spaces. He created the things that were necessary to sustain the life that He was going to create. In the second set of 3 days, He filled the environments. He put the things in place that belong in those places that were created. So in the very creation that existed, that occurred, we see that there was intelligence in the creation. There was intelligence in the design. There wasn't happenstance. It was, you know, sometimes you'll see somebody kind of poking fun at creation, and they'll mimic God as if He's going, "Well, over here, let's see what we can put." That's not what we see. We see intelligence presented in the way creation was performed. Job had this to say about seeing the intelligence in creation. And I put the scripture up here for your convenience on the slide. Job 12, starting verse 7. "But now ask the beasts, and they will teach you. And the birds of the air, and they will tell you. Or speak to the earth, and it will teach you. And the fish of the sea will explain to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In whose hand is the life of every living thing, and the breath of all mankind? Does not the ear test words, and the mouth taste its food? Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days understanding. With him are wisdom and strength. He is counsel and understanding." Particularly verse 11. You have senses. With your mouth you can taste food. With your ears you can hear words. You can be observant of the creation that's around you. And we can learn things about God from the creation. Job is saying, can't you look around and see the glory and the power of God in creation? Can you see the mark of God in the things that are created? Now, we've read Genesis this morning. And I dare say for everybody in this room, being believers of the Bible and its holy inspiration, we read that and we say, well, that's enough. God has told us about creation and we believe it. But there are people who don't. And now, I think there's a way for us to look at creation and see the mark of God. I put a big asterisk by this and say, this is my opinion. You might do your own research and you may find people that differ with my opinion. But I think there's a way to demonstrate to someone who isn't going to look at Scripture and at least make an argument that there was intelligence in the design of creation. So, I'll give you a minute. You look at all these photographs of all these different images. And do you see what's in common with every one of these photos? You don't have to say it out loud, of course. What's in common is something called the Fibonacci sequence, sometimes referred to as the golden spiral. Fibonacci was a mathematician in Italy. His name was... Sean's already nodding his head because he's a physics guy, right? His name was Leonardo Bonacci. Fibonacci is just an Italian way of saying son of Bonacci. So his nickname was Fibonacci. And so the sequence, the math sequence, is described as the Fibonacci sequence. Fibonacci did not invent the sequence. He did not discover the sequence, but he's credited with making it popular. He made it popular because he solved a puzzle using the Fibonacci sequence. It was a puzzle about rabbits. The puzzle goes, you have two rabbits, and you put them in a space, and then there's all these other parameters that go with it. At the end of a year, how many rabbits would you have? I'll let y'all figure that one out. But in summary, this led to much more discussion than just rabbits. It was the sequence of numbers that was used and how other researchers, other scientists, started discovering that these sequences occur in creation. The way the sequence works, and mathematicians added zero to it later, but you start with zero, and you add the next number to it. So I think everybody in here can follow along with that level of math. So zero and one is one. So you take the number that you added to it, which was one, and you take the sum that you received and you add that together, and you're going to get two. And then you take the number that you added to it, which was one, and then you take the number that you summed, which was two, and you add that together, and you get three. I think there's an easier way of demonstrating it, is that is you take the last two sums and add them together to get the next number. So 1 and 2 are 3, 2 and 3 are 5, 3 and 5 are 8, 5 and 8 are 13, and so on. The sequence never ends. So that the number series is the Fibonacci sequence. And it's closely associated with something called the golden spiral. And they're not exact. There's an argument that if you start researching this, there are naysayers that are going to say, yeah, but they're not the same. They're not exactly the same. They are so close that mathematicians accept them as being the same. And I'll give you another example of something that is not exactly the same, and yet mathematicians accept it, is pi. Something about pi is 22 over 7. It's a ratio. But you can convert it to a decimal, and it's 3.142857. Don't be impressed. I have it written down right here. And that, as we know, that number never ends, and so it only approaches being the same as pi. It's the same thing with the Fibonacci sequence and the golden spiral. They're not exactly the same, but they approach so closely to each other that we accept them as being the same. So now, can you see the Fibonacci sequence in all of these photos? So the ram's horn and the seashell, that's the easy ones, right? And you probably can see the spider web is in a spiral. Do you see the spiral in the sunflower seeds? They start in the middle and they spin out. That's in the sequence. The pineapple is the one that gives people the hardest trouble. Can you see the spiral in the pineapple? It runs from the top, and it goes around and to the bottom. It runs this way. You see it pretty clear in that one right there. So next week, if I'm in Walmart and y'all are over in the produce section looking at pineapples, I'll know what you're doing. So the spiral is seen in creation. Wrong button. But the numbers also appear in creation. And the way the numbers appear in creation is find a flower, find one that a bug hasn't eaten on, it has all of its petals, it's properly formed, and count the petals. Chances are the number of petals in the flower will be a number that appears in the sequence. Find a stem of a vine, of a plant. We'd always talk about poison ivy having leaves of three. Three is a number in the Fibonacci sequence. Petals and flowers, leaves and stems, they frequently occur in the sequence. All right. Well, somebody's going to say, well, all those things are biological. You're not talking about all of creation. Because this is just biological stuff. Well, I would argue that spider web isn't really biological. It was a biological that produced the spider web, but the spider web itself is not a biological in the reproductive way of biology. But really, the Fibonacci sequence, the golden spiral, is seen in so many things, even in physics. The formation of a wave, the curve of a wave matches the golden spiral. Storms spin in the golden spiral. Galaxies spin in the golden spiral. And it's much more in concept than just what is created in tangible things. It's also in intangible things, meaning the way we think. Artists understand that the Fibonacci sequence, this golden spiral, is appealing to the eye. So the younger generation recognizes the game character here that the artist created to be in the shape of the golden spiral. As photographers were taught, our compositions should use the golden spiral to be appealing to the eye. So it's not just that things are made in this sequence, we see this pattern repeating in creation. It's included in the way we think. The way we think, we are drawn to things that occur in this spiral. And I can't explain the connection, but I also know that it's in your very DNA. The helix of the DNA strand is in the golden spiral. And it's my opinion that I think that artists will sign their work, and I think God is showing His mark in creation in this sequence. Job said, "Creation will teach us. Creation will explain to us the power, the intelligence, the wisdom of God. Creation puts God on display before our very eyes every day." The writer of Proverbs put it this way. Proverbs 3:19 beginning. And I broke it up so that there would be some alignment of the statements. "The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding, He established the heavens. By His knowledge, the depths were broken up and clouds dropped down from the dew. My son, let not them depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion." In verse 21, we're encouraged to let them not depart. What is them? What is it that we're not to let depart? It's the wisdom of God. It's the understanding of God. It's the knowledge that He demonstrates through His creation. He's pointing back through creation to the Lord's wisdom, to the Lord's understanding. He says, keep sound wisdom and discretion. Here's another example of creation being used by a New Testament writer, Paul, to illustrate what we can learn from creation. He's writing to the church at Rome, and in chapter 1, verse 20, he says, For since the creation of the world," and listen to this statement, this is fascinating, "for since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen." Now ponder that for a minute. The invisible attributes of God are clearly seen. I think that means if we take the time to study creation and look at the world that we live in, we'll see the power of God. The verse goes on to say, "Being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. God's wisdom, His understanding, His power, them being on display, it's creation that understands that He is God. His own creation recognizes His power and His deity. Paul is using this truth to make the comparison to those that do not recognize His power, His deity. You look down in verse 24 of the same chapter, those that are rejecting creation, those that are rejecting God. Verse 24 says, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness and the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and they worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. They have it backwards, don't they? Instead of honoring and worshiping the Creator, the one who demonstrates the power and wisdom and knowledge, they worship what He created. And we see that in statues or monuments. Think of idols. We think of things that are created, money. Those things that get worshipped instead of the one who did the creating. They turn away from the truth to honor something that has never demonstrated power, has never demonstrated wisdom, the wisdom that God possesses. You know, we studied this in our James class, and I guess some of those thoughts, me teaching this previously, caused it to kind of flow together. We remember the discussion there about the source of wisdom being from God. But there was a false wisdom that does not come from God. James is blunt about it when he gets to that section, and he talks about what this false wisdom will produce. James 3:15. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. So there's a false wisdom in turning away from the Creator and going to the things that are created. So thinking again about creation, in the very creation that occurred, with Paul writing about being obedient to the Creator, James talking about observing the wisdom of the Creator, we see that there was obedience in creation itself. 8 times in the passage that we read, there was the statement, God said, let. Verse 3, I won't go through all 8. Here's an example. Let there be light. He spoke it into existence. He didn't have to stir something up in a pot and dump it out. He didn't have to have some tool, some instrument that he had to use to focus the power. It was just quite simply that God speaks, and it is so. This is the very premise on which we understand that God cannot lie. Right? I mean, it's just a logical thought. If He speaks and it's so, He can't lie. Because if He said it, it would be so. The power that's manifested in God in creation and the fact that He just simply spoke, and creation obeyed His voice. Let's look at Mark 4, starting in verse 35. And in summary, we'll see that when Jesus spoke, creation obeyed Him too. Mark chapter 4, verse 35. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Then he arose, he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "How can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" So Jesus spoke, and creation obeyed. Isn't that logical? God spoke, and creation obeyed in it being formed. Makes perfect sense, as a student of the entire story, that Jesus would have the ability to also speak to creation, and it would obey. You stop and think about the human race. We are the only creation of God that has the choice of whether or not to obey or not. There's no other thing in creation that you can name that has a choice in their obedience to God. He gave us that freedom. He gave us that freedom so that we can choose to serve Him. Every day, we have to make a decision. Do we obey when our Creator speaks? Do we question His commands? Do we try to negotiate a deal over, well, maybe I'll do part of that, but I'm not going to do all of it? Or do we honor our Creator and we obey? The alternative is not good. James pointed that out. It's earthly, it's evil, it's full of envy, it's self-seeking. That's where confusion exists. So my encouragement this morning to you is that you would follow God, that you would choose to follow truth, that you would choose to follow the wisdom of God. I think that when we leave here, everything's going to be wet, but we can still see creation all around us. And every day we have that reminder right in front of us that God provided that creation for us and that we should serve Him. If there's anybody here this morning that needs to make something right with God, we'd want you to take opportunity of this morning to do that and not leave here, leaving something where from Bible class we talked this morning about we just don't know when the Lord's going to come. We'd ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.